Hey, Kev, let's follow this trail over here. This looks like there might be something waiting down there.
All right. Hey, wait a minute. Do you hear that?
Yeah, I thought it was just me. What the heck is that?
I don't know what that is. Whoa, do you smell that, too?
That's unbelievable. Hey, look.
What the?
Hey, look, those branches are moving over there.
What the heck is that?
Holy cow, is that what I think it is? Look at that thing.
Oh my god.
It's a freaking Sasquatch.
Welcome to the Bigfoot Terror in the Woods Sightings and Encounters podcast. I am your host, W.J. Sheehan, author of the series of books, Bigfoot, Terror in the Woods, Sightings and Encounters. 11 volumes available in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. And those audiobooks can be found at Audible and Amazon as well. And by the way, folks, as I've told you in recent podcasts, I'm in the process of recording volume 11's audiobook, okay? So sit tight, you know I'll tell you when it's ready. And now, may I introduce you to my brother and co-host, KJ Sheehan. Kev, what's happening, brother?
It is a beautiful day today in North Carolina after having to build an ark the last couple of days.
Yeah, I just told you before we came on, I left the hospital last night after 11 o'clock. It was like a freaking monsoon.
Yeah, it was raining hard yesterday and windy. I had to go out and run some errands on the weekend, and I was like, holy cow, this is a lot of wind and a lot of rain.
What do you guys say down there? Tear the dog off the chain?
Oh,
or
yeah,
something?
The wind to blow the dog off the chain.
I love that.
Yeah, that's my buddy Greg told me that one time. We were getting ready to go out sailboat racing in St. Petersburg, Florida, and it was blowing so hard. We're like putting on our racing gear in the parking lot, you know, and this gust came and it blew like a huge frond off of the palm tree. It went flying through the air and landed on a car and was like, boom. And he's like, he leans over at me and he's like, I think it's blowing the dog off the chain.
It's funny. Some of these expressions. Oh,
that's a keeper.
Priceless.
That's a keeper.
So what do we have in our cryptids in the news?
All right. Another honor. Well, get ready to get the creep on. And I'm not kidding today. I was reading this account and it gave me chills.
Well, hopefully the listeners will get some goosebumps as well.
They will. And by the way, it's going to be a little confusing because it's one of our favorites that I'm going back to revisit that we have a lot of laughs about. But I don't know if you'll be laughing about this account.
I'm laughing now.
I know,
maybe
I know.
We'll
laugh
later.
A little bit, and then you'll be like, holy crapola. We're going to talk about our favorite little freaky children, the black-eyed children.
Oh, man.
Oh, get ready. It's too bad it's not still rainy and gloomy because someone may want to come in to get some shelter.
Yeah, dry up a little bit by the fire.
Just until our parents come and get us.
If they come.
Oh, they'll come. So this is the legend of the black-eyed children. And a lot of this account comes from a publication called the Business Standard, and it's good.
Oh my god! What is this doing in the Business Standard?
Know.
By the
I
way,
I don't know, but it's fantastic.
Okay, let her rip.
Get ready. So, they may knock on your door on a late rainy night. They may knock on your door in the middle of a snowstorm. You may see them coming up to your car while you're waiting at a red light or at a gas station. it might seem like they need help, or they might just stand there staring at you for no reason. Sound familiar?
Yeah, yeah. They just seem to materialize.
They're just there. And these children, they don't look threatening. They would want to get in your house or your car. They're very persistent, if not loud. And suddenly, you'll notice something is not quite right about these children.
Yeah.
Not only their demeanor, but when you get close enough, their eyes are pure black from lid to lid.
You have such beautiful eyes.
Like the Black Sea. You know, no iris, nothing, just black.
Yeah, they look like a great white shark.
Yeah.
You don't know if he's looking at you, away from you, but you always feel like all he wants to do is hurt you.
I was going to say, but you do know you're probably going to end up dead.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You're close enough to look into the eye. Unless there's 8 inches of glass between you and it and the aquarium.
Now think about this for a second before you continue. If these nasty little black-eyed demons were to lead some type of assault on an individual, what would that be like? I mean, think about that for a minute. They're children, but would they suddenly break into some fiendish Wolverine-like attack, biting and clawing, and, you know, it would have to be nasty.
Well, according to this account that we're going to get into, they have some other abilities.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh is right. So when you see these black-eyed children, they're typically between the ages of 6 and 16. And I don't mean that they're literally that age. That's what they resemble in real life.
Right, right.
They have very pale skin, and you may see them, in addition to what I mentioned earlier, you may see them hitchhiking, begging on the side of the street, or, most creepily, on the doorstep of your home. And there's a dozen stories or so that keep circulating, all following a very similar pattern. Kids with eyes completely blacked out, appear at a person's home or vehicle. They knock on the door, and they gently but persistently insist upon getting inside the car or inside the house. Hello, do you mind if we come in? We just want to use your telephone. Can you give us a ride home? But the other consistent thing is that anyone that runs into these critters is almost immediately struck with an absolute sense of dread and fear. So there's something else going on here, too.
Yeah. No doubt about that, man.
Yep. So this is also kind of cool. Aside from the completely blacked out eyes, the kids look pretty normal, but their attire seems outdated. And in a few cases, people have noticed that the kids had talon-like feet. Maybe the transformation didn't fully go through.
So they're barefoot.
Well, not always, but this is new information for me. But people have reported looking down at their feet and seeing talon-like feet.
Maybe they were covered with, like, bell-bottom sailor's pants or something.
Yeah, it's a little bit like, remember on, I think it was Expedition X, when they went out into the Uinta Basin in Utah?
Yeah, yeah.
And they were looking for, what do you call them, the transforming beasts. I can't think of the name.
Oh, the shapeshifters.
Sorry. And they said that when you encounter one of these shapeshifters walking down the road, make sure you look at their feet, because they said that was the one thing that they can't transform.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
So, like, you know, you'll see what looks like a human, and then you look down at your feet and you'll see hoofs.
Yeah.
So maybe like this is something similar to that.
Like a 6-foot-tall goat.
Yes. Yes.
Thumbing a ride.
Yes. Now, no one really knows how these little black-eyed kids pop up. Some folks believe that they're aliens trying to reach out to Earth. Demonologists believe that they're children of the devil himself. And if you let them in, you're allowing the devil to enter your life.
Yeah, that's my opinion, by the way.
It's not that hard. Not that hard to get there.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah. Some people, you know, so some of these sightings go back to the 1980s. And however, most originate around 1995. And a Texas reporter named Brian Bethel wrote about 2 alleged encounters with the black-eyed children that are quite famous. So get ready to buckle up here.
Okay.
In this account, he said that he encountered 2 children in Abilene, Texas, with pale skin and black eyes. And in 2012, Bethel retold his story on the TV show Monsters and Mysteries in America. He then wrote an article for the Abilene Reporter News where he described his experience again. So one of the stories goes like this. In a snowy town within the middle of nowhere in Vermont, an elderly couple heard the sound of 3 loud knocks on the door. They opened the door and saw 2 children, a boy and a girl. "Parents will be here soon. May we come in?" The children did not make eye contact and just stood there in the doorway. The elderly couple were hesitant, but after a few moments, they let the boy and girl inside. The kids settled on the couch while the wife made some hot cocoa, and the husband asked them questions that went completely unanswered.
Boy, that's freaking creepy.
The wife returned and noticed that her cat was scared and angry with the children. "May we please use the restroom? We both have to go." The wife looked at the kids and she finally saw them. The children's eyes were as black as a starless universe. She directed them to the bathroom and returned to her husband, who was covering his face with his hand. "Did you see their eyes?" The husband then showed his hand full of blood from a nosebleed. The power suddenly went out, and the house turned as dark as the kids' eyes.
Oh, my goodness.
The wife headed to the restroom and was confronted by the voice of the kids at the end of the hall uttering, "Our parents are here." The kids then exited the house, leaving the door wide open. The wife then noticed that there were 2 men at the end of the driveway. The men were very tall and slender. The wife waved but did not receive the same friendly gesture. The 2 men and children then drove away together in 1 car. The power then came back on after the kids left. Throughout the next week, weird things happened in the house. 3 of the 4 cats went missing, and the 4th had been found dead in a pool of its blood. The husband continued to have nosebleeds and finally went to the doctor, where he was diagnosed with a very aggressive form of cancer.
Oh my God.
How do you like that account?
I've never heard that before.
Me neither.
And just the whole scenario, like, may we use your bathroom? Like, who goes to the bathroom 2 at a time, a boy and a girl?
Maybe the devil does.
Yeah, and then showing up at the end of the hallway with the lights going out, you know. Boy, oh boy, man.
I mean, you know, I see dogs get agitated with people, you know, even if the people are okay. you know, generally okay, not perfect. But if a cat goes a little wild at someone that comes in your house, that's definitely a red flag.
Yeah. You know, these animals are very sensitive to things. Yeah. And I told you, my buddy Philip has some type of critter in his house. And when this thing shows up, his dog, Diesel, over 200-pound Mastiff, you know, is looking, you know, where this thing is. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows it's there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I don't know what that is about animals and that connection. You know, we know they can smell really good.
Well, they have sense, though, too, especially dogs, because dogs are looking out for you. You know, cats, I don't think they care what happens to you. So that's really freaky when a cat goes nuts.
Yeah. Right?
Cat's like, yeah, whatever. I can run this place without you. So, you know, I have a couple more things to say about these creepy little bastards, but that's the main account we're going to cover. But there are legends of these kids showing up in the UK as well. So in 2014, the Daily Star over there wrote 3 front page stories about sightings of the black-eyed children in a pub in Staffordshire. And ghost hunters who believe that the black-eyed children were extraterrestrials or vampires or ghosts took these alleged sightings very seriously. So, you know, not sure what they are. I mean, you and I are pretty sure what they are.
Yeah, front page, too, on this Daily Star.
Yeah. And nowadays, people still claim to see the black-eyed children when driving late at night down an empty road, or outside their window late at night, or even lurking in the shadows of their room. Many people have reported seeing the black-eyed children standing in the corner of their room during their episodes of sleep paralysis, right? So this is where people wake up, but they can't move, and they're looking like in around the room, and they see one of them standing in the corner. Yeah. Or people wake up in the middle of the night because they sense someone was watching them in the shadows and they see one of these children.
I'll tell you what, some black-eyed creep shows up in my room, I'm going to jack that little sumbitch up.
By the way, good luck sleeping tonight.
Yeah.
And then, Bill, you know, not in this account, but one of the creepiest things, especially in this day and age of all of the ring-like camera doorbells, is that these critters are rumored to be able to look up through the camera the other way. And I know that's technically impossible, but we're not talking about technology, folks. But, you know, where they'll knock on the door, there's accounts where they knock on the door of a business, and there's a camera on the front door of the business, and people be looking at them like, I'm not answering that door. These kids look freaky. And then they'll talk to the person through the camera the wrong way.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, I can see you there reading your comic book.
Yeah.
So you like Archie, huh?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I like Archie, too. Dead.
So what'd you say, Bill? Did it give you a little chill?
That is freaking creep-fest, man.
Right?
Oh.
Black-eyed children.
And we had that account a while ago. I forget the whole thing where that guy was in the building, like the second floor of some kind of office building after hours, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they were showing up, talking to him through the camera of the doorbell
through
or the outside.
Through the security camera.
Oh, the security camera, yep. That was it.
That's exactly
it. Just standing there. Hi.
Hey, can we use your phone?
I know it's late, but
our parents are coming to pick us up.
Yeah, and how about these two tall, slender creeps in a car?
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe the car dematerialized after it went up the block, you know?
I don't want to go for a ride, and I don't want to get any closer. That's all I know.
Yeah. The first one I had heard about was, I don't know, remember a man or a woman. I thought they were at a gas station or park somewhere, and this kid's just showed up by their window.
Yeah.
And asking them if they could come in or get a ride.
100%.
You know, and I was just like, can you imagine just turning your head and you look like, talk about a double take. Like, what
the heck? Well, and that's the drill. Like I said, it's like a red traffic light at night, you know, nobody around, or in a gas station, you know, you pull up and, you know, before you get out to put gas in your car, they're knocking on your window.
Yeah. Now, listen, I got to take you back for a second. I interviewed a guy from the sheriff's department in California. And he originally called me about a freaky account he had. I don't know what this guy encountered. It was probably some kind of shapeshifter out in the desert. He thought it may have been a Bigfoot, but didn't see it. At any rate, as the conversation evolves, he was in charge of watching the serial killer Ramirez. Remember him?
Vaguely.
Okay, well, he was a nasty serial killer.
Compared to the nice serial killers.
Yeah, well, and you may remember pictures of him where he was showing the palm of his hand on the camera and he had a pentagram tattooed on his palm.
Oh, yeah, good guy.
Big smile on his face like he was happy to be there. Mm. Well, he was watching. He was in charge of, on his shift, of keeping an eye on Ramirez's cell. Now, apparently Ramirez was allowed visitation, and one of the people he found out later that came to visit him was a, I don't even want to use the word, but I'll say it. It was a she, and she was the high priestess of a Church of Satan in one of the areas of California. Mm. And he told me that she always came in dressed in bright red, and he said her skin looked like white freaking paste. And immediately he was set back from the get-go, feeling creepy when she had entered. It wasn't later, wasn't until later that he found out who she was and that she was coming to meet with him and chat with him. You know, these people are freaking out of their minds possessed.
Yeah.
And Ramirez and this girl, he was probably thrilled, like his kinfolk were coming to visit him. And she wanted to be around the guy who had committed such atrocities. So this pasty skin, like these black-eyed kids with these shark eyes, there's something going on there, and it's not good. Wow. Well, is that it, Kevin?
That's it, man. Yeah, these kids come knocking on your window. I don't think I have to tell you, but don't let them in.
Don't let them in. All right, I have a good account here told to me by a fellow named Kevin Shands. A resident.
Hey, that sounds a little familiar.
Shands. A resident of Virginia. Here's what Kevin had to say about his encounter. First of all, Bill, I would like to personally thank you for giving people like myself a forum through which we can make known to the public just what's going on out there relative to this Bigfoot phenomenon. It was most certainly something that I had never given much thought about, that is to say, until the events of this day. It was the first week in June of 2006 when I flew into Denver in order to do a sales presentation for one of my firm's largest customers. I was not the only one presenting that day, and come lunchtime, quite a buffet was set before us all to partake of. It was during lunch that I was sitting down with a representative of the company with whom I predominantly dealt with, when he invited me the following day to hike into Botany Canyon within the Black Hills National Forest. His name was Henry Blankenship, and I knew him to be quite the amateur ornithologist, as well as an avid cyclist. He also knew that, amongst other things, I had completed an Ironman competition the previous year. The following morning, we got an early start, realizing almost immediately that this trail was going to be a difficult one to follow and that we could barely find where to begin. It was only about a half mile in that the howling had begun, and I asked Henry what it was. He said that he had no idea and had never heard such a thing before, but whatever it was had to be large. I have to say, having experienced this firsthand, it is very difficult to assess distance when it comes to hearing such a howl. We knew it was very deep and prolonged, but to gauge distance was virtually impossible. The first howl which we heard lasted some 15 seconds or so and stopped. It was only perhaps 60 seconds after the first, which a second howl occurred. After hearing the second howl, we could tell that whatever the distance was, the first was closer to where we were. Right from the get-go, having heard these loud howling noises, my hair was standing on end on the back of my neck. We were in an area where there was a slight hill or grade rising to our right-hand side. And I should also mention that Henry had brought along his dog, Benson, who was a cross between a bloodhound and a German shepherd that had somehow gotten together. He was very large and very friendly. So we were hiking with this grade to our right, and Benson suddenly stopped and started to bark. Out of the corner of my eye, being prompted by the direction Benson was facing, I saw something large and dark pass through a number of tall pines near the top of this incline. It happened very fast, but I definitely had seen a figure moving quickly on two legs, whose outline was broken up by the many trees that were present. Benson kept barking intermittently as Henry asked him, "What do you see, boy?" I said to Henry, "There was a figure moving through the trees, which I had just seen seconds after Benson began to bark. Whatever it was, had either moved ahead of our position in the trees or had gone over this rise out of view. But there was most definitely something or someone there. If it was in fact a man, then why was he being evasive about us seeing him, and him seeing us? This was a fact that was already troubling me in my mind, while Henry had said very little about it. It was a short while later, as we were trying to find our way through what was a poorly marked trail, that the beginning of the canyon wall came into view. It was topped with grass and a few sporadic pines, and we were looking across what I will describe as a multi-tiered forest, transitioning from low to higher trees that led up to the base of the canyon wall. Behind the outline of the canyon wall's top edge were blue skies with white wispy clouds. As we looked, a figure emerged from the back of what we could see, coming into view for a moment and then disappeared back down to wherever it had come from. It was very dark in color, and at the yardage from which we were seeing it, we were unable to determine much else about it. I said to Henry that it was the same thing I had seen back a ways up on top of this hill, and that whatever it was had the ability to cover much more ground than we had, being much further along than we had traveled. Having seen this thing to our northeast, maybe 2 minutes later, after having ducked out of view, a huge roar or howling erupted to what was our northwest. This roar exceeded what we had heard earlier some tenfold, and it was definitely much, much closer. We now knew that something was upon this bluff, and something else was northeast of our position. I have to say that at this point, it would have made no difference whether we chose to move forward or head back. We were virtually in the middle of two unknown creatures. Henry and I both picked up two very stout pieces of tree limbs to use in defense if need be, and we continued onward into this canyon. Moving into the canyon, we came upon a trickling stream, which was very narrow. As the stream meandered around, there was this spongy moss surrounding it. There was also dense foliage, which made it almost impossible to see very far or with any clarity. Benson, who was perpetually walking ahead of us with his nose to the ground, approached some of this moss and began to growl, which was immediately followed by him retreating back to where we were. Henry and I stepped forward, wondering what had caused Benson to start to growl and back away. And as we looked at the moss, there were a number of large impressions in the moss by the creek, which resembled large human-like feet. The prints were almost 20 inches in length and quite wide as compared to our own. As we stood there with yet another piece of the puzzle to ponder, the canyon wall rose up in front of us some 50 or so feet away, and for whatever reason, I looked up. Standing on the edge of the canyon's rim, looking directly down on us. Now, folks, this canyon, he's calling it a canyon, and it was, but not like the Grand Canyon. This thing was, I forget now, maybe 50 feet high. So they were in this cutout, which they're calling a canyon. Standing on the edge of the canyon's rim, looking directly down on us, was a large hairy beast on two legs. I grabbed Henry by the arm and pointed upward, and as soon as the two of us were looking eye to eye with this beast, it turned and retreated from view. We had both just witnessed a huge Sasquatch observing us from the canyon's rim. Now, this canyon was not very deep. Oh, here we go. Perhaps 75 to 100 feet in my estimation. And what we had seen was about 8 feet tall and maybe as wide as a yardstick or better. It was covered in hair for the most part, with some skin being visible on its body. The hair was much longer on its head, and its appearance was like that of a muscle man. I felt suddenly as though I was going into a panic attack and began to breathe quite heavily. Henry, seeing what was happening, did his best to console me, saying that we'll get out of this and such, and we began to move forward again. As I said earlier, this trail was indiscernible to our eyes. I wasn't even sure if there was a trail or if we had veered away from it, but we were basically now following the creek. The creek was maybe only a foot or two wide and a couple of inches deep, and we had come to a point where we could see about 150 feet in front of us, and there was a tree lying across the water just ahead. The trees and brush on either side of the creek were so thick and green that we could not see anything in any direction. It was then that just to the left of us, where this tree had fallen across the creek, a small tree started to shake violently. We heard what sounded like a snort, which was followed by another large creature that leaped across the creek with one long jump just behind the tree that was knocked down. It briefly stepped up into the brush, and we now knew there were two of these monsters. One on the top of the canyon, and one down in it with us. Benson saw it and didn't make a sound, which was very unusual behavior for him. He had stayed right by my side with his eyes fixated ahead of us. At that moment, I have to speak truthfully that I thought we might lose our lives and never see the light of day again. The second creature was in appearance equally as large as the other we had seen, and was now in the brush moving about unseen by either of us. As we slowly made our way forward, we made it to a point that we were next to the canyon wall and walking on a crushed gray stone path along the wall. Benson actually started to walk just ahead of us again. And by doing that, he actually calmed the two of us down. It was as though he wasn't sensing any danger again and was back to his normal self. Perhaps these two creatures were just watching us. Or maybe they were trying to frighten us out of their turf. Whatever the case may be, their efforts had worked. We made our way out of there double time and saw no more of the two Sasquatch. Some miles later, having reached the end of the hike, we caught a ride back to our truck. During the ride, we were telling the guy about our encounter, to which he said, "You're not alone." Apparently, according to him, many people had seen and experienced much of what we had just told him in a variety of different ways and locations in the region, this being a relatively well-known fact among the locals. In hindsight, thinking of the original two howls, my opinion is that one Sasquatch had seen us and was calling the other in. My belief is that the second one had come into the canyon and that it was the creature who had left the prints and the moss. When the tree began to shake, the second Sasquatch must have been trying to get us looking in its direction in order that we would see it leap across the creek. Maybe this was some type of intimidation or fear tactic on its part, but we will never know. What I do know is this. The sheer presence of these beasts was intimidation enough for the both of us. The fact that we knew they were there and we couldn't hear them was extremely unnerving. I felt like my head was going to be ripped off my shoulders at any moment, and that would be the end of me. Nothing, Bill, that I have said to you can prepare you in any way for actually being there. Only when it happens to you will you be able to comprehend and understand all of which I have told you. There you have it, Kev.
Wow, I love that line. Nothing I can tell you can prepare you for this until you actually experience it yourself.
Right. Be careful what you wish for.
I mean, it brings me back. I know I mentioned it quite a few times, but to that law enforcement officer in Whitehall, New York, where he said something along the lines of, "My whole life I had been told that there was no such thing as these creatures, but yet I stood there looking at it 5 feet in front of me."
Right. And it brings me back to what Neil said most recently down in Georgia, when the guy confessed to him having seen the Bigfoot rip the head off of that 300-pound hog.
Yeah.
And Neil asked him, both of these guys had 308 AR-15s. And he said, "You were armed. Why didn't you shoot it?" But it didn't matter in that moment. It was like facing a freaking an Abrams tank with a pea shooter.
Yeah.
Just like intense fear and, you know, the weapons are no good. Mm. Yeah, unbelievable, Kev.
Terrifying. What a story. Where did that take place? Did they say?
Well, I'm going to tell you. Let me just flip back because it's worth... by the way, as I look for this... Okay, here you go, folks. If you've heard of this place or know anything about activity around here, BigfootTerrorInTheWoods.com and hit the contact button. They were hiking into Botany, like, you know, the study of plants. Yep. Botany Canyon, which is located within the Black Hills National Forest. So I guess this is in Colorado.
Well, South Dakota, probably Black Hills.
Okay.
That's my guess.
Okay, he was in Denver at this meeting, and the guy invited him to go for a day hike while he was in the neighborhood, you know? Mm. So, be careful what you wish for, man, because—and how about—we were just talking about the black-eyed kids and the sensitivity of dogs and cats. this guy's dog, Benson, was really on the alert and warned them kind of on a couple of occasions of something that was nearing them or near them.
Hmm.
So, but even the dog knows when to back away.
Yeah.
Like, hey, master, can we go back home?
Time to get out of here.
Yeah, time to go, gentlemen.
Certainly we could go get a snack or something.
Unbelievable.
And that's a great account, Bill.
Yeah, and creep. Talk about creepy. Can you imagine being locked into a canyon with... You can't run out of there.
Yeah.
And at one point he said they were at midway. And it didn't matter if they went forward or back. You know, you're stuck.
Yep.
Remember Steely Dan did that song, Stuck in the Middle with You?
Yeah, and a Bigfoot.
And a Bigfoot. or make that two Bigfoot. Woo-wee. So, Kev, what do we have in our listener mail today?
Yeah, so what's really interesting, Bill, I picked out a couple of emails to read this week prior to what I knew, prior to knowing what I was going to do the podcast on. And prior, of course, to knowing what you were doing the podcast on, because I never know what you're doing until we get going by design. So it's interesting now. You'll see they're a little bit related.
Okay.
So the first one comes in from Rich. And Rich writes, Hi, Bill and KJ. Just a quick note to let you know I enjoy listening to your podcast each week. I don't have any personal experiences to share other than a recurring dream as a child about King Kong that lived in the woods behind our home. And he stood taller than the trees. And it would just creep me out and I'd wake up, you know, from a sound sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I later heard about Bigfoot, it piqued my interest, and I've been captivated by the topic ever since. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting, and what a weird recurring dream.
Yeah. So here's where the strange part comes. He says, I thank God above I didn't dream about creepy black-eyed children. I have absolutely no desire to learn more about them. Keep up the good work, and as you carry more gun than you think you're going to need, please make sure you have enough ammunition to get the job done. Cheers, mates. Rich.
Well, Rich.
Isn't that funny that he mentioned the creepiness of the black-eyed children? I didn't know I was going to do the black-eyed children when I picked out that email.
Maybe this podcast was... Especially for Rich.
Hold on, Bill. There's someone knocking at my front door.
Hold on. Go answer it.
Seems like they just want to come in. They're waiting for their parents.
Ooh, they're selling Girl Scout cookies.
All right, here we go. And our next one is our next email is double packed. So it's a little long, but it's good.
Okay.
Two different things in it that are pretty interesting. Comes from Dalton. And Dalton is from Mississippi.
Yeehaw!
And he says, Hello, Bill and Kev from North Mississippi. Absolutely love the content you guys put out. The podcast has become my number one thing to listen to while I'm performing my job as a local truck driver for a lumber company. I wanted to tell you about an encounter that my father had in, I believe, it was either 2010 or 2011 in Marshall County, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
It was on a 160-acre parcel of land that we were leasing in a small community called Chullahoma. He did not have an actual sighting, but was chased out of the woods while deer hunting by something huge that was howling like what he said was a freight train.
Hmm.
So isn't it interesting? Like this is a howling encounter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is what you just went through. Well, I thought it was interesting. Right. Two emails picked kind of randomly and both tied to this podcast. So
yeah,
there was also knocking sounds coming from at least two, if not three different directions around him as if he were being surrounded. He told me that he couldn't believe he told me that he couldn't believe he couldn't see what was making all the noises, but he never did. He backed slowly out of the woods with his rifle in hand for almost 300 yards until he made it to an open pasture where his truck was parked, and he got the heck out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And he says his dad is a most avid outdoorsman, and he knows that he isn't scared of anything that roams in the woods. But when he recounted this story, he turned ghost white and fear was written all over his face.
There you go, right?
So
there's another guy like these guys in the canyon.
Yeah.
Only he didn't see anything. He was just intimidation by sound.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
No, listen, Kev, let's face it. Nobody's out in the woods and starts hearing crazy tree knocking and screaming roars and doesn't realize something's around.
Yeah, something might be wrong, Bill. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's a possibility. Something's going on here.
Let me check inside my brain. Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, let me walk towards this screaming roar and see if I can find
probably
something.
Probably want to put a round in the chamber and start getting out of here.
All right, God.
And I told you it was double packed. So now he brings in another idea or an idea for cryptids in the news and other oddities. And he talks a little bit about it, which I hadn't heard of. And he talks about the dog man or dog men of Taylor, Mississippi.
Huh.
Apparently, in 1948, a family was terrorized for a great length of time for what they and other residents around them claimed to be dog men. It became known as the Siege of Lockett Ranch, and some people reportedly went missing during this time and were never found. Sightings and reports of these creatures have continued around the small town even up until present day.
Interesting. When did it start? The 40s?
1948.
So, and he's saying that stuff is still going on there to this present day. So we're talking 70 years.
Exactly.
Wow. We got to look into that,
Kev.
See what we can dig up on it.
I put it on the electronic list here. Dalton from Mississippi, thank you so much for the double-fisted approach.
Yeah, Dalton, really, I'd like you to get back to me and leave me a phone number. I'd like to have a conversation with you about these two things because, you know, to talk with someone is way different than getting an email, you know. In this day of text messaging and everything else, I like to talk to people. So go to, folks, look, if you've seen something or say something like Dalton just did, BigfootTerrorInTheWoods.com, hit the contact button, reach out, and I will reach back out to you.
Through your security camera.
Yes.
Can you let us know?
I represent W.J. Sheehan. You know him, don't you?
We're just waiting for our parents. Well, that's it, Bill. Well, good podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks for hanging in there with us, too, in this period where I've got some crazy global travel going on. So, you know, we're going to miss a couple episodes or put in a couple of solos from Bill, maybe even a single rebroadcast or something like that. But thanks for hanging in there with us. We do the best we can, and we certainly appreciate all of those 5-star reviews.
Yeah, fantastic, folks. And remember, if you should find yourself on a hike in a canyon or in northern Mississippi prowling around in the woods, you best remember one thing, my friends. Always carry more gun than you think you're going to need. Sleep tight.